Kirk is a co-host. Kirk, can you confirm that you can hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, and you sound great, Kristen.
Wonderful. So, keep your cameras and mics off, and you can hold questions till the end. If you have a burning question in the middle of my talk, then raise your hand and Kirk will interrupt and call on me, because what we're going to explore today, you may have some burning questions. So I fully expect somebody to raise their hand in the middle of this. Then Kirk will unmute you and you can ask the question. Or you can hold off until the end. Up to you. Welcome.
Can I add something real quick, Kristen?
Please.
If you have questions, please submit them in the chat, and then I'll compile them and then give them to Kristen, and she'll go through them after she's done giving her talk. So go ahead and send a chat in with your questions if you want to hold them till the end, and then I'll push them over to Kristen.
All right. Well, here's the overview of what I've been exploring for the last 35 years. It really came to me about 5 days ago. I was in Aspen, and a lot of the stuff that I teach comes from my teacher, Genpo Roshi. A lot of it comes from sitting in my own practice and contemplating what works, what doesn't work for me. But sometimes it's called MacGyvering. I'll go to sleep and I'll have like this question in my mind when I go to sleep. And then you wake up in the morning, you have the answer. I learned that from Steven Kotler, who just wrote a book called The Art of Impossible. Came out last week. And so I kind of MacGyvered this. It's like, what is the simplified, big overview version of all that I've explored and all the puzzle that I've put together in the last 35 years? And I realized that it's just two parts, a two-step process. How's that for simple? And the overview is step one, just be where you are. Let me clarify, be where you are for a while, right? And then step two, if you're wherever you are for a while, you can now choose whatever you want to be next. How I've explored this in the past with y'all is the hose, like the analogy of the hose. And a lot of people on the call are long-term clients. Some are new clients. Some have never worked with me before. So let me just give the overview of one of my favorite analogies, which is we have 10,000 states of being and see them as droplets of water. And they're coming through our systems like water coming through a hose. Here comes joy, here comes love, here comes fear, here comes anger, here comes frustration, and on, here comes a thought, here comes a negative thought. And these are all droplets of water that are supposed to flow into, through, and out of our lives. And proven by science, certainly emotions are here for 10 to 90 seconds. And then they're gone, so long as we're in flow with them. But whenever we see something that we don't like, we kink the hose. And then that feeling or that emotion or that thought or what have you just gets stuck in our system, starts recirculating round and round and round. Now, we don't tend to kink the hose when joy comes through. So unfortunately, it doesn't get stuck in our system, recirculating round and round. But we do kink the hose when fear comes through, for example. And so it gets stuck, or a negative thought, and on. So the overview, the two steps, be where you are, means be in flow with whatever it is that's showing up in your life. And when I say be there for a while, sometimes we have to be there for a while because we're so repressed in our culture. I'll go over that more in a little bit. As for the choose whatever you want, only so much as you're in flow with the many states of being, the 10,000 states of being that are coming through the hose, is there room in the hose for something else to enter that you can now choose to introduce into your life? So, simple overview. Be where you are for a while, and then choose whatever you want after that. I'll give you some concrete examples of this soon, but let's first go over our first part, which is be where you are. This is very hard to do. Let me tell you a story about Michael Zimmerman. He is a Zen master, a Roshi. But long before he started studying Zen, he worked with the same teacher as I did. He was married and he had four children. And his wife died of cancer. And he really, really loved his wife. And his kids were all under the age, I believe, of seven. So all these young children. And Michael Zimmerman was Chief Justice of Utah. He was a very busy man. Lived in Salt Lake City. And he was in such a state of despair, devastated. He was terrified. He was angry. He was sad. And he was just tortured by this. And he was talking to psychologists and reading books and trying to move through these emotions as fast as possible. Really busy. Didn't know what to do because the wife was the one that was raising the kids. Now all of a sudden, he had this tremendous responsibility to take care of these four children while being Chief Justice. I mean, you can imagine he was overwhelmed. So finally, months into this process, he stopped by the Zen Center where my teacher was teaching, and he had a lot of other teachers there as well. But he didn't, Michael Zimmerman didn't know anything about Zen. And he sat down, and the room was filled with people meditating. And after a while, a woman came in, and she was a Roshi from the Ukraine. She had a very strong accent. And Michael, in that moment, as she sat down, she began her talk, he heard the first words of Zen that he ever encountered. And keep in mind, now he's a Roshi. He's a very famous Zen master. I mean, this has been quite a long journey for him, but these are the first words that he ever heard spoken of Zen from this woman from the Ukraine. She said, "In Zen, there is no hope." And in that moment, it just blew Michael's mind. Now, look at that saying, "In Zen, there is no hope." So this is about the first part of my overview, be where you are. So Michael was in this incredible state of despair, and he was trying to hope for a better future. Hope is about the future. Regret is about the past. Hope is about the future. He was living for a more hopeful future. And when you're living for a more hopeful future, many of you are on this call because you're living for a more hopeful future. You signed up for these calls because maybe you have anxiety issues or fear. It's like you want to move past this. You want to feel better. You want to get past a difficult time in your life. Like, we tend to live for a more hopeful future, and hope is considered like this beautiful part of, you know, humanity that keeps us striving towards, you know, becoming better, stronger, happier, et cetera, et cetera. Like, everybody wants to have more hope in your life. So to hear, to have Michael sit there and hear that there is no hope, that there isn't a better future, what that did and why that was so profound for him was that it allowed him to just be where he was in this moment. And where he was in this moment was devastated and terrified and sad and angry and overwhelmed. So in many ways, the first part, be where you are, involves hopelessness for a better future. Like, you're not, like, when you have hope for a better future, you say things like, "I wish I could feel better. I will feel better." You know, you have will and you have grit and like, "I'm going to do this." And anytime you say these kinds of things to yourself, you're also saying, "I don't want to be where I am right now." So in many ways, a Zen moment comes from hopelessness. No hope for a better future. There's a great quote, happiness is the absence of striving for happiness. So in that moment, Michael Zimmerman stopped striving for a happier future, stopped striving for a way out. He was just able to just sit and marinate in what he was feeling in that moment. So I'd like for us in this first call to embrace the virtues of hopelessness. Now, some of you may get this, some of you may not. There is a great wisdom and a great delusion found in hope, right? The wisdom of hope is like, oh, it keeps people like optimistic. But the delusion of hope is, so long as we're constantly in a state of hope, which is about the future, we're not in the present moment. And there's a delusion found in hopelessness. People can become very depressed, even suicidal. But what's the wisdom of hopelessness? That's what we're exploring right now. And again, a lot of you work with me because you're going through a difficult time. I'm a fear and anxiety expert after all. And if you're scared, if you're going through, and I certainly am, I'm going through a divorce. My mother's dying. I got in a bad car accident. I have vertigo. And it's like, I'm going through a difficult time too right now. So the first part is I have to be where I am, which is I'm struggling. And I'm scared. And on the one hand, I do hope for a better future, but on the other hand, I don't know that that serves me right now. I just need to be where I am right now. So what we're going to do is we're going to find the wisdom found in hopelessness, where we're not about trying to create a magical future, where we're only just about being where we are right now. This is a exercise that I do with people sometimes at camp. This is an exercise that I often do with people who are more advanced clients that I've been working with for a while. It's an exercise we're going to do together right now. I'm just diving right into the deep end on this. A lot of times people, when they do breathing exercises, they breathe in calm and breathe out fear. Breathe in happiness and joy and love, and breathe out despair. And this can often become spiritual bypassing. This can lead to toxic positivity. And I assume that you guys know what toxic positivity is. Maybe you don't, but toxic positivity occurs when you only feel like you're in a good place if you're positive. And if you're in a bad place, like the example that I gave at camp last weekend, is a mother who says, make it a great day to her kids every day. And they have been given a message that it's up to them to make it a great day. But if they're not having a great day, then there's something wrong with them. So it shames them for not being happy and positive all the time. And so her kids were really struggling with anxiety and depression and fear and all of that. And she kept saying, make it a great day, make it a great day. And the kids kept trying to make it a great day. And the more they were efforting to be what their mother needed them to be, the more they were defending their right to have negativity in their life. The more upset they were getting, the more they were in rebellion to their mom and the message that she had. It's like they weren't given permission to just be where they are. So we're going to be where we are. We're going to do the exact opposite of this. We're not going to breathe in positivity. And again, this is throwing you guys into the deep end, but this is the radical opposite of everything that is out there. You know, there's lots of positivity practices out there, gratitude practices. We're going to try the exact opposite right now. And just give it a chance. See where it leads you. Instead, you're going to breathe in your fear. And you're going to breathe out the hope of ever getting rid of it. What this looks like, we're going to spend about 5 minutes doing this. Every time you breathe in, I want you to breathe in something that you're afraid of. I was just working with a person who's struggling with cancer right now, 15 minutes before I got on the call with you guys. And she's very afraid of dying. So for those of you that are struggling with something that could kill you, cancer, what have you, breathe in your fear of dying and breathe out the hope of ever getting rid of that fear. Breathe in if you're starting a business or if you're in a position at work where you're slightly underqualified, like breathe in your fear of failure or breathe in your fear that you are an imposter. Breathe out the hope of ever getting rid of that fear. Breathe in your fear of being inadequate. Breathe out the hope of ever getting rid of that fear. Each time you breathe in, I want you to breathe in something else that you're afraid of. If you're struggling to find things that you're afraid of, I wouldn't be surprised. Most of us don't do this kind of work. We ignore our fear. We block it out. So you may not be really in touch with your fears with an S. So then if that happens, don't feel like you have to breathe in something that you're afraid of, like mannequins or closed spaces or failure or success or any of those things. Just breathe in fear without a thought, and then breathe out the hope of ever getting rid of it. And this could really simplify it for you. Or you can alternate back and forth between fears, things that you're genuinely afraid of, or just fear itself, the emotion not tied to a thought or a thing. But does anybody have any questions about the exercise before we get started? If so, mention it in the chat room. All right, no, nothing's coming in. So let's do this together. I'm gonna be quiet now. Presence yourself, put your feet on the ground. This is a meditation and this is a self-love practice. How many fears should we concentrate on? It's not about concentrating, because like imagine that you're looking at a cat and you're concentrating on the cat. Like it's a lot of effort, it's heady, it's using your mind. This is something that is not about concentrating. This is more just a physical experience. Like if you're concentrating on a cat, that's one experience. But if you're feeling the cat, that's another. So it's more like the question maybe should be, how many fears should we feel? As many as shows up. We're going to do it for 5 minutes. That's a lot of breaths. My guess is how many breaths per, like we'll probably do this 100 or more times. We'll at least have 100 breaths over the next 5 minutes. So just breathe in your fear and breathe out the hope of ever getting rid of it. Hold on. As in always, here's a question. As in always, we'll have that fear. Yes. Yes, David. As in always, we will have this fear. Because fear is just a part of life. We are always going to have fear. And we're always going to be afraid of dying and always going to be afraid of failure and always going to be afraid of rejection. So this is just sitting and being with what is. Maybe for some of you, the first time ever, not trying to push through fear, not trying to get rid of it, not trying to get past it, just sitting with it for 5 minutes, breathing in our fear and breathing out the hope of ever getting rid of it. Let's start. Make this a holy practice. This is a meditation. So sit upright, straight back. Don't be surprised if you cry, because fear and sadness tends to be really tied together. Like if you ask a child to do something scary, they might cry instead. So just notice if you cry and just keep up the practice. And I'll stop talking now, 5 minutes. Notice if you have a hard time doing this. If you've been ignoring fear for a really long time, you may struggle with just even finding your fear. Keep looking. You can also shift to emotional pain. Breathe in emotional pain. Breathe out the hope of ever getting rid of it. This is also your fear. What else is there besides fear? Michael Zimmerman was devastated. He was sad. He was angry. He was overwhelmed. And in that moment, when he heard the first words of Zen, in Zen there is no hope, he was able to fully just sit and be with what is. He gave himself permission to just be all these things. What else is there for you in this last minute of this exercise that you can breathe in and breathe out the hope of ever getting rid of? This is a practice of no magical future. All you have is right now. This was the first moment of Zen for Michael Zimmerman that changed his life forever and set him on course for now 30 years later, him being a Roshi, a Zen master. And we thank Michael for his example. If you have any questions about this or if you have any comments, then now's a good time to ask them. You can raise your hand and Kirk will unmute you. You can ask a question. Also in the chat room, what was that like for you?
How does this keep you from not being like sad and depressed all day?
How do I keep from being not sad and depressed all day?
Well, if you have something not you, but a person doing this exercise, I think my mind wants to go to like, for example, when I get anxious, I have trouble sleeping. So then I have a fear of that. So if I think, oh, I have a fear of sleeping. And then I say, well, it's never going to get better. My mind wants to go to like, well, I don't always have, you know, I'm just like trying to make myself feel better about it. Like, well, you do sleep. You're not, you know, like just so that I'm not so like scared or depressed. I don't know if I'm.
What was this exercise like for you? Were you able to do it?
Oh yeah. I was crying and I was very calm and I was very able to sit and keep my eyes shut. And normally when I try to do some kind of meditation, I'm constantly like opening my eyes and looking at the clock, even if it's 5 minutes, but I didn't feel that way. And, I liked it. I mean, I like the whole concept too.
You
because
cried.
I tried to push it away.
Okay. You cried, but do you feel sad right now or depressed right now?
No, I actually don't. I mean, no. But I think, like I said, my mind goes to trying to make it positive. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, to make myself feel like, oh, it's not, you're really not that bad. Like when you try to think like, oh, it's horrible, and it's never going to get better. My mind automatically tries to make myself feel better versus when I'm trying to feel better, my mind makes me be scared, if that makes any sense. It like did the opposite.
Michael Zimmerman was also trying to make himself feel better. And of course, you lose your wife, you have 4 children under the age of 7, you have an incredibly high-powered job that takes all of your time. I mean, you know, it wasn't working. And it doesn't really work for that many people. It like, okay, I'm going through a difficult time myself right now. And I find that I've done a couple things that made myself feel better. I went snowboarding on a powder day. I for the first time ever, took an edible, right? And went dancing in the desert, right? I have had positive thoughts, but what happens, and this has actually been proven by science, when you do that, then it ricochets. And the very next day, like the day after I took that edible, like for 4 hours, I was like so happy and wasn't thinking about my divorce, wasn't thinking about the shit show that is my life. But the next day it tripled down and I was just, you know, for having those 4 hours of loveliness, I was 3x the next day in despair. So when we buy ourselves a moment of relief, it's actually been proven by science that it causes, like, the more you search for joy and happiness, the less joy and happiness you ultimately have.
Right.
That's the reason why spiritual bypassing is getting so many minutes of fame right now and toxic positivity. But I'm hoping that in this exercise that you had a moment of trying something completely different, the exact opposite. And just by letting it be and being where you are and allowing yourself finally to feel that negativity, that it won't be a depressing experience. And yes, you cried, but can you also notice that perhaps you enjoyed your crying? Because you were finally given that chance to just cry. Like, imagine that mother that says to their kids, make it a great day, all of a sudden would say, you know what? Just, if you're feeling sad, let's just be sad together. It's like the kids.
Yeah, when I said I cried, that wasn't a negative thing. Right. That was a positive thing.
So
I
like
when I have that emotion, because that's why I signed up for this. Yeah, I guess this was my first minute doing this. And But I've had, so we had a child at age 44 years old out of the blue after years of infertility, and he has Down syndrome. So there's moments where I actually feel better when I'm out walking and it just hits me like, oh my God, this is my life now. Like, how did this happen? And I cry, and it's an ugly cry, but then it feels better because I'm getting it out. So I guess I feel better doing it, but then I do get still get scared, like, okay, but we need sleep, and if my sleep's affected, like, that's bad for my health, right? So I go back to being scared again and trying to, like,
I think that you've answered your own question. Like, I think that this is a very different exercise for you, and it wasn't a bad exercise. It didn't lead to depression, and it didn't lead to sadness. So how you prevent it from leading to depression or sadness is you keep it up. So when I can't sleep in the middle of the night, and when I'm scared that I can't sleep, I just sit with my fear. And
Sleep.
For the people that are on the call right now.
What does that look like for you? Yeah, like, what does that look like when you sit with your fear in the middle of the night? Like, what are you thinking in your head?
I have a video that I created about this that, Kirk, can we send this to them afterwards to practice?
Actually comment. I'm going through the membership page, and there's actually about a half hour discussion on one of the calls. I think I can send it out. One of the calls going exactly through the whole process of monkey mind at night, and also has the insomnia video as well.
All right, so we'll send that afterwards. But in a nutshell, it's kind of similar to what we just did, where I'll just wake myself up a little bit more and I'll just sit and be afraid. Let's all actually do this right now in a different way. You know, what we've been exploring so far is just the virtues of hopelessness, right? Because again, hope is about a better future, and it prevents us from being where we are right now. And if what we're feeling is like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to get any sleep, like this is just torture for me, then we have to allow ourselves just to be in that torture and that fear, and let it be and feel it, not trying to rush through it, not trying to create some sort of magical future, not trying to override it with positivity. Like, all we have is right now. Can we just be with what is right now? And this is Zen. And it has worked miracles for me in my sleeping. So just be where we are. I feel afraid. So let's just say that right now. And I know all of you guys are muted, except for me. But keep your mute on. Like, don't unmute yourself. And that way you can have some privacy and autonomy. But just say out loud, I'm afraid. I'm afraid. I'm afraid. Some of you are afraid of not getting a good night's sleep. I'm afraid of not getting a good night's sleep. Say that. I'm afraid. Notice how real and raw and pure this moment is. This might be the only place in the world that you can actually just say, I feel afraid, and nobody's going to say, no, 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 you don't want to, you've got to let that go, or any of that crap. Just give yourself permission right now to be afraid. Be where you are. I'm afraid. Period. Not comma, and I can't let this get the better of me, and I've got to overcome this, and I've got to push through this. Just sit and be afraid, period. And what may happen, Anne, is that the fear goes stronger because maybe you've been spending decades ignoring it, not wanting having anything to do with it, trying to push through it, get rid of it, etc. And so that fear now, for the first time in its life, has a chance to just be, it might have a lot to say. I know that when I started just sitting and being afraid and being with my fear, that a social anxiety from childhood started coming up. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't breathe around people. I'm just so scared that they're going to reject me. And I had to spend about 6 months working through that. And all that I did to work through that is just sit and notice, wow, I'm really scared that this person is going to reject me. And this is when I was on a tour, probably twice a week, speaking in front of audience after audience. It was a very scary time for me, but it was like the perfect opportunity for me to just really, truly be in my fear. Speaking in front of groups that I was afraid of rejecting me and just sitting with it, not trying to get rid of it in any way, but just sitting and I'm afraid. I'm freaking terrified. And can you see that this isn't going to turn into any kind of torture? Or there's a saying that whatever you focus on grows, right? And so we think, oh my gosh, if I focus on fear, if I focus on being afraid, then it's only going to get worse and worse. And that is true if you're focusing. And it goes back to David's comment, right? Is this about, hold on, let me see if I can find it. Is this about concentrating on it? If you're concentrating on your fear, yes, it'll grow. If you're focusing on the fear, yes, it'll grow, because that's dealing with your emotions intellectually. This is more about just being in your body and feeling it, which is very different. So whatever you focus on is going to grow, but whatever you feel and whatever you're intimate with on a physical level, I won't say it shrinks, but what it does is it just calms down. Okay, let me see. Question during the talk.
Well, Kristen, David has a question as well.
Okay, what is your question?
Hi, Kristen. My question is regarding the 5-minute breathing exercise and inhaling with a different fear. I can list about a bazillion fears. Is there anything we should do to filter that out for the important ones, or?
I actually think that the more I do this, because this, instead of this being a heady experience in order to keep it in your body, like I just explained, I don't think that we even need to focus on fear of something. I mean, I think that it can be interesting to begin with. Like, okay, I'm like with my client that I just had, I'm afraid of dying. I have cancer. I'm afraid of dying. And just making a whole 5-minute practice just around that. But if we're looking, searching, seeking, like, what am I afraid of? What am I afraid of? We're in our heads, right? So if there isn't a specific fear that's in your life right now, then it's just a matter of breathing in fear itself, just as an energy or a feeling, not associated with any kind of situation, and then breathe out the hope of ever getting rid of it. It just simplifies things. Does that answer your question?
Yep, thank you.
Okay, so Liz wrote, I find that speaking my fear out loud makes fear sound trifling when I listen to them. Liz, do you want to unmute and maybe we can talk about it and clarify things?
Hi.
Hi.
You know, it may be that it just because coming into this, I flew to my mom's house. She passed away a week ago, and I actually had a cryathon last night just being in the house, and I'm kind of all cried out, and now I'm just pretty relaxed and zen, and yeah, my fears kind of seem a little silly, even though I know they affect me and they're real and they're born of actual things?
Silly, maybe, because there's, I mean, it sounds to me like you're really in flow with your emotions right now. Is that what you're saying?
You know, maybe I'm just looking at a bigger picture now.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of fried.
The great cosmic joke is how seriously we take our lives. And yeah. And it's like it all starts to feel kind of silly. The more I do this work, the more nothing really matters. And it's like the more we just breathe in our fear, the less stigma it has anymore, the less seriousness it has. It's just fear, right? And it's sadness, and devastation is just devastation. And I mean, maybe that's what you're experiencing. And you're also, you know, when our loved ones die, the gift that they leave us with is we're still here. We're still breathing. And we become very aware of being alive. Because mom's gone. She's dead. What does that even mean? And I'm still here. What does that mean? Like, we start to ask these existential questions. I'm here, and I feel sad, and I feel afraid. Of course, we're going through this exercise together. It just doesn't seem like that big of a deal anymore, does it?
Well, it's like I'm looking at the things that are holding me back, and yes, there's like bigger issues. So I think, you know, what I, well, just life and death, and you know, this is my life. I've got to make it count. So,
You know, what's going to make it count for you?
Well, just achieving some things I want to do. You know, one of those things is starting a business that's sort of, to me, like a fun business, but nonetheless a business. Applying to one of those adventurer clubs. I need to be in an adventurer club, one with the good old boys.
Some of you have heard me talk about this, some of you haven't, but there's a study done in hospice, people at the end of their lives. The ones who are in resistance to dying feel like they hadn't taken enough risks. They hadn't acted on their business ideas. They hadn't taken a chance in love. They hadn't done the difficult thing. And so they feel like they hadn't fully lived. They hadn't gone all the way. And so they were in resistance to death. The ones in hospice who are okay with dying were the ones that had acted on their business ideas, had taken the risks. In this study, though, there was no mention whatsoever of whether the risk paid off, whether the business was successful, whether they got the girl. None of that mattered. The only thing that mattered was that they took the risk. Risk involves fear. And in many ways, the people who won't have regrets on their deathbed are the ones who were willing to feel fear. And back to Anne, it's like the fear of not being able to sleep. It's like, I don't want this. I don't want this. I don't want this. I don't want this. I don't want this death, right? Like, we can go our whole lives just not wanting something, like Michael Zimmerman, right? I don't want this to have happened to me. I don't want to feel devastated. I don't want to feel terrified. I don't want to feel angry. I don't want to feel sad. And it's the I don't want that's the awful feeling. And it's the I don't want that can become the centerpiece of somebody's entire life until they're on their deathbed and they're like, uh-oh, right? if we learn how to want fear, if we learn how to want challenge, if we learn how to, I mean, it's like, does anybody want to their wife to die and be left with four small children? No, of course we don't want that. But it's reminds me of a story about a cat who discovered that happiness was in her tail. And she kept trying over and over to get the tail, right? And all she did was just run around in circles, round and round, and exhausted and frustrated after a while. It was just such an endless pursuit. She eventually stopped and just went about living her life. And she discovered that in doing so, her tail would follow her wherever she went. So instead of like trying to get something, be more positive, get sleep, can we just drop the chase and just be where we are, live our lives. And I mean, maybe if you're going to do anything, if there was one practice that I would encourage people to do based on this hospice study, I would say, do things that scare you, including, mind you, the exercise we just did. Just sit and be with your fear. Not trying to get rid of it. Like, I'm afraid that I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. Okay, I'm going to just sit and be here with my fear. Not going to turn up the dial on it or artificially exaggerate it, but just sit and be with whatever fear is there. That's a Zen moment. And then we can even choose to do things that are scary. Of course, it's scary to sit with your fear, but Liz, for you, start a business. And you say you want to do it for fun, but starting a business is not necessarily fun, but it is fun. It's like fear is fun. That's been my experience. And then you won't have regrets on your deathbed. Liz, did your mom live a risk-taking life? Did she like go for it? Did she live out of her comfort zone?
You know, I wouldn't say that, but in the arc of her life, she did become more and more of a badass. She had more of a DGAF attitude after the divorce from my dad. And, you know, I learned some of that from her, but, you know, really the difference between me and my mom in a lot of ways is that I'm like more of a risk taker. You know, that's one dimension, I guess. She fought going on hospice tooth and nail. She had a lot of life force at the end. It was only in the last couple, but like the last month, that she let go of a lot of things. Just couldn't, she didn't have the energy to live.
Okay.
Because of her illness, but she had a lot of last year, yes. You know, possibly that feeds into my fascination with this.
When you say fascination with this, what do you mean? Fascination with what?
Well, you know, as you get older, you get more conservative or more cautious. And, you know, if we look at skiing, it's because I had some injuries, but like I felt that I had lost a certain thrill I used to have when I wasn't obsessing with this stuff. You know, like the last year with my mom, she started to need being on an oxygen machine, which scared the crap out of her. possibly because of having asthma her whole life. She knew what it was to not be able to breathe, and it was just like, always a battle against that fear in the last year.
Can we learn not to battle our fear? Can we learn to just merge with it?
Well, I guess that's why.
Go ahead.
That's why we're here, right?
It? And that's what this exercise was for. And back to Anne's question too, like, okay, have fear of not being able to fall asleep. Of course you have fear of not being able to fall asleep. I have fear of getting on a ventilator. Of course I have fear of getting on a ventilator. These things are scary. Not being able to sleep is awful. Not being able to breathe is awful. And it's like by melting and submitting to that fear, it's like, oh, I don't want to do that, right? But if we do it, actually, we're just submitting to life itself, the nature of life itself, which is really freaking scary. Our practice, going back to the overview, is be where you are for a while. And I mean a while, especially if somebody has been in resistance to fear. Can we just spend a while just being in this practice of saying unapologetically, I feel afraid. I feel afraid. Or breathing in your fear and breathing out the hope of ever getting rid of it. And it's not marinating it. It's not accelerating it. It's not turning up the dial. It may get louder for a little while, sure. But so long as you stay in your body, and it's not like a mind exercise, it's a physical exercise, which is why I had you do it with breathing. Because whenever you incorporate breathing into a practice, it's a physical exercise. So breathing in fear, like I am afraid, not even fear of anything in particular, but I am afraid. And breathing out the hope of ever getting rid of it, it's like you just have a moment of presence with it, period. And just see what happens. I think it's a gorgeous practice. It can be very sad for some people, though, because we don't want life to be scary, but it is. When I cry, I feel like a little girl. Makes me feel very young. So I go back to just, raising myself as a child, as a 3, 4, 5 year old. It's like, imagine a world where you can say, as a little girl, I feel afraid. And then it's okay. Not trying to rush us through it, just allowing us to just sit and be scared and be sad and what have you. And that's a moment of Zen. And then the second part is once you're in flow with this feeling, and I recommend if you can't sleep at least a month, just sit with your fear. It probably will work its way out, and then fear won't have to wake you up in the middle of the night. It's like you spend some quality time with your fear, it'll run out of things to say. It's like a whining child. Just let it speak, feel it, and then it won't wake you up, has been my experience. But the second part is you can now choose whatever it is that you want to have enter in the hose. I'll give you an example of all of this in my own life, where I've been going through some pretty difficult experiences. Mom dying, divorce, car accident with a vertigo and neck problems. So for me, I'm just sitting with the pain, sitting with the vertigo, sitting with the feelings of complete rejection, feeling of deep sadness. And I'm sitting with that for months. But every once in a while, I'm like, okay, I would like to move this along a little bit faster. And I really don't recommend you do this for at least a month if you're going through something difficult. For me, at this point, I'm at almost 10 months with the divorce, and I'm only just starting to do this now. And it feels a little premature, because back to that study I mentioned, if I have a moment of replacing my fear and my pain with something positive, then it triples shows up the next day. So I know it's not time yet. But when I do replace it with something else, like, oh my gosh, I'm marinating, I'm in my head, I'm obsessing, like I just honor that. And then the ones that I found that I'm replacing it with, just to give me a little moment of shift, is I'm never going to understand what went wrong in my marriage. Just like relinquish any need to understand. Or another one is, this is the perfect moment. Whatever I'm feeling right now, my fear, my frustration, my rejection, is perfect. Another one is, the universe is giving me this lesson of fear, of pain. Why? What is it here to offer me? And then the fourth one that I've been replacing it with is, I'm Kristen fucking Ulmer and I'm going to be just fine. So that's my practice. And this is as simple as I can make it. The first part, be where you are for a while, is pure Eastern Zen. People in Japan and China and India, whatever, in the last 2,600 years, they do not practice anything but that. Just be where you are. Monks in a monastery, just be where you are. See what's there, honor it, spend some time with it, breathe in your fear, breathe out the hope of ever getting rid of it. That's it, period. In America, our contribution to Zen is that we also now have choices and we can choose whatever we want. Now, if you just go right to the choice, like of make it a great day, or I'm going to choose positivity, or I'm going to have a gratitude practice, and you don't first spend some time being where you are, it's just going to be spiritual bypassing. It's going to turn into toxic positivity. And next thing you know, you're going to have major sleep issues, or kind of recirculating negative thoughts, or the 3X the next day, or your kids are going to have the anxiety disorders or fear, like I mentioned, depression that I mentioned with a family that's make it a great day. The mother that says that, by the way, is also on antidepressants. It's like, it doesn't work, right? So you can't skip a step. You can't go to number two before you stay with number one for a while. So number one is, be where you are for a while. And then step B is, choose whatever you want. And that's the American version of Zen. It's very new. But we can't do two without doing one. One has to start. So right now my practice is, oh, look at that, I'm in my head again. Oh my gosh, I'm obsessing. Oh my gosh, I'm terrified. I'm so upset. Sitting with it, sitting with it, sitting with it, until it calms down. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm Kristen fucking Ulmer and I'm going to be great. And the universe is teaching me something. That's the practice in summary. Now, the first part is probably very new for a lot of you. The second part isn't. We cannot get to the second part until we really go all the way with the first part. These calls are ultimately always going to be about the first part. Anybody have any questions? These calls monthly are mostly going to help you find a way to navigate the first part, just being where you are. We spend so much of our lives trying not to be where we are. We spend so much of our lives wishing we could feel better. Just willing and grit that I will feel better. All that says, I don't want to be where I am. Anytime we try to replace what we are feeling with something more positive is saying, I don't want to be where I am. You can't skip a step. Let's just acknowledge and honor and sit with whatever is coming through our hose and allow it to be in flow. Not trying to let go of it or replace it with something more positive. Not trying to rationalize it away. Not trying to understand it as a way to get rid of it or control it. Just right now, this is what I feel. And if it's joy, great. And if it's fear, great. As we navigate this process together in these monthly phone calls too, just know that if you start to say things in public, like I'm afraid right now, I'm afraid right now, you're going to have people saying, oh, no, 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 you don't want that. You know, I'm angry right now. Oh, that's toxic. You got to let that go. So be wary of that. Maybe with your friends and family, you can explain to them the practice that you're now engaged in, that you want to just be able to sit with anything negative coming through the hose, and that any help that they can give you in supporting you, just being with it rather than trying to rush you through it because it makes them feel uncomfortable. You might want to have that conversation. In my book, it's kind of, I wrote about this as being like a marriage ceremony. Like when you marry somebody, you know, there's a celebration and a proclamation and it's very public. Like, can you make it very public to the people in your life that, hey, I am going to spend some time marrying my fear and my negativity. Like I'm going to spend some time being intimate with it. I'm going to learn how to be in flow with it instead of resistance to it. I'm going to be where I am with it. And I know that this is not normal. I know that this is very out of the box. I know that this is very different from what we're taught. Any help you can have in supporting me to do this would be wonderful. Any questions about that? Any comments? All right, then I am going to finish. Let's see. There's a man who did laundry for a living, and he also practiced Zen. And one day it finally happened. He achieved enlightenment. Enlightenment is intimacy with all things, according to Dogen Zenji. He achieved intimacy with all things. And it was just such a miraculous moment. Oh my gosh, right? He ran to tell his master, I achieved enlightenment. And the master said, well, what is enlightenment? And the man looked at the master and he blinked a couple times. And he bent down and he picked up his laundry basket and he went back to work. This is a very simple practice. There's no place to arrive. There's no hope for a better future. This is just about being intimate with all that is. And just going about your life. I bow to you. Thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me today. Thank you for engaging in flow practice with me today. If you can get in flow with your fear, you can get in flow with anything. Thank you. And I'll talk to you next month.